the new climbing boots. He leaned back on his elbows and breathed the cold air deep into his lungs. The snow had picked up in the last half hour. Judging by the altimeter on Claudia's sport watch, they were making good time. Scott was carefully searching for any early warning devices Miner might have planted along the trail to alert him of an assault, but so far, he hadn't seen anything. He also frequently withdrew the assault rifle's night scope from his backpack to scan the terrain above them. He never felt compelled to look behind. After their break, the pair got back on the trail and continued their hike toward the summit. The winds were fierce and bit at any exposed pieces of flesh. The snow blew from almost every direction, cutting visibility and forcing Scott and Claudia to move more slowly, choosing their steps with more care. One wrong move, and they could tumble down the mountain. Scott took a length of rope from his pack and tied it between the two of them, so neither lost the other. They stopped to rest two more times, finishing off their water and two more power bars. Because of the frigid conditions, they were happier when walking, their bodies burning more calories for warmth. Despite the high-quality suits, gloves, and boots, the cold found its way in everywhere, and each of them was feeling numb. Not a good situation, considering they hadn't even faced the hardest part of the ascent yet. Half an hour after their last rest stop, Claudia gave a tug on the rope, and Scott stopped. When he turned to face her, she was pointing up. He removed the night scope and peered through the green light to see what she was pointing at. Between gusts of snowy wind, he could make out two buildings, which he knew from Claudia's diagram would be Pilatus's two hotels. Several hundred feet above the larger hotel, he made out the faint lights on top of the Pilatus radar station. It had taken them over 5 hours to hike to this height. They came to a ridge hidden from above by a wide plateau. Had they been normal hikers, the plateau would have signaled the final part of their journey, with plenty of cold beer and Würstel to be had only 20 minutes away in one of the hotel bars. But Scott Harvath and Claudia Mueller were anything but normal hikers. The plateau allowed Scott and Claudia to maneuver their way around the mountain without risk of being seen by any sentries above. The idea, which had been Claudia's, was to come from a direction Miner would never suspect, right up the icy face below the church. To have attempted to infiltrate the perimeter by one of the typical tourist routes would surely have been to invite early detection, and probably more than a few bullets. Scott had had enough of those. Because of Miner's comments, Scott and Claudia believed the church was the most logical point of entry into the fortress. Any other choice might have meant days of searching for entrances that were either impossible to find or impossible to access. It took them over an hour to round the ridge and arrive at the base of their climb. Looking up, Scott saw only snow, rock, and ice. There wasn't any sign of the church, but he trusted Claudia's judgment. They slid into harnesses, strapped on crampons, laid out their ropes, and taped each other the rest of the way up. As Claudia was the more experienced climber, it was decided she would lead this part of the ascent. She warned Scott again about the dangers of climbing with the assault rifle fully assembled, but Scott's mind was made up. He had climbed more difficult mountains with bigger weapons before. Besides, the need to be prepared for what might lie waiting for them when they reached the top far outweighed all other considerations. Scott assembled the rifle, while Claudia removed the pickaxes from their packs and finished laying out the rest of the gear. They checked each other's rigs and satisfied that they were completely ready, or as close thereto as possible, Claudia started to climb the face. She moved with extraordinary skill and agility. Climbing was normally viewed as a man's sport, requiring lots of upper body strength, but Claudia was obviously very strong. She swung the axes with great force and had no problem hammering in the pitons as she worked her way up. Scott was sure the climb could have been done in half the time if he hadn't been working with an injured left arm. There was no other way to covertly assault the mountain, so they had decided this would be it, but that they would take it slow. His left arm throbbed from both the fatigue of the climb and also the cold. Scott was glad that Claudia was on point, chipping out toe holds and hammering in the pitons. He had no idea if he would have been able to do it. He was breathing heavily and appreciated Claudia's frequent stops to rest. He knew she didn't need to, she was stopping for him. The climb was slow going, and the wind tormented the pair with every step, threatening to rip them from the face of the mountain and cast them into the valley far below. Scott was growing more tired, and started initiating the breaks himself, and with greater frequency. Claudia never said a word. She waited for him to give her the thumbs up, and only then would continue. Finally, the sound in his ears of his own heavy breathing was replaced by the sound over his headset of Claudia clicking her tongue twice against her teeth. That was their signal that they were approximately 20 meters away from cresting the top. Claudia froze where she was and waited for Scott to join her. When he did, he rested for 10 minutes without saying a word. He was exhausted. He couldn't ask Claudia to go straight to the top and put her life in danger by peering over the edge toward the church. What if there was a guard stationed there or some sort of motion detector? The fact was that because Scott knew what to look for, he needed to be the first one over. When he felt he had sufficiently regained his strength, he began to lead the climb. Hammering in the pitons and cutting out the toeholds was excruciating. Scott hadn't realized how much he had demanded of his right arm while he favored his left. He wasn't a quitter, though, and they were so close now. Just a few more meters. Claudia hung back, monitoring his progress and giving him plenty of space as he had requested. She was to have her weapon drawn when he went over the top, just in case he was taken by surprise, and one of Miner's men should happen to peer over the edge to see if anyone was behind him. Scott didn't want Claudia to be easy pickings, unprepared on the face all by herself. Harvath continued to cut his toeholds and hammer the pitons. Reaching above his head, he readied to hammer another home, and the unthinkable happened. An enormous gust of wind peeled him right off the face and sent him shooting downward. Although he knew he had set his pitons properly, this was the moment in which every climber fears he will discover his safety measures hadn't been set as well as he thought. Scott kept falling, his hands flailing, knowing there was nothing to grab onto, but trying nonetheless. Then came the snap of being jerked to a slapping halt, but instead of feeling it in his harness where he should have, he felt it hard along the left side of his ribs and dangerously across his windpipe. It took a few moments for him to realize what had happened. He had not been stopped by his rope and safety harness, but rather by the shoulder strap of the assault rifle. Somehow, it had gotten caught on a piton, and, with the downward weight of his body, was threatening to cut off all his oxygen and strangle him. Scott clawed at the strap, trying to free himself, but it wouldn't budge. His legs were completely out of energy, and he couldn't muster enough strength to even push himself away from the frozen wall of rock behind him. Harvath's eyes drifted out over the dark valley below, and he wondered if this was how it would end. 76. Claudia scrambled up the icy face to where Scott hung choking. In a flash, she had unsheathed her blade and was preparing to cut away the strap of the assault rifle pinned against his throat. As she brought the blade down toward the strap, what she saw amazed her. Harvath was shaking his head no. He didn't want her to do it. Choking was okay, but God forbid the soldier should lose his assault rifle. Men. Claudia frantically assessed the situation. If Scott didn't want her to cut away the strap, maybe there was another alternative. She raced up to just about his shoulder level and tried with all her might to lift the strap and untangle him from where he was caught. As strong as she was, Scott was too heavy. It didn't work. Time was running out. She thought about trying to wedge herself between Harvath and the face, using her legs to push him out and off the piton. But there was too great a danger of them both becoming entangled and then falling with a combined weight that their equipment couldn't handle. No, there was only one solution. Scott had to be lifted up, and that could only happen with Claudia off the face and anchored on the crest. After wrapping an extra length of rope around Scott's chest and under his arms, Claudia shot upward. There was no time to dig proper toeholds or hammer pitons. Safety was forgotten as she focused on the man slowly choking to death below her. The wind continued to buffet her body as she climbed. Twice the gusts threatened to rip her from the face, but she dug in deeper and refused to be beaten. Claudia's axes swung and cracked into the ice, delivering bone-jarring pings through her arms as she scrambled up the mountain. With each swing of the axe came a synchronized kick of the foot, her crampons sending shards of ice and rock flying in all directions, until she was just below the snow-covered crest of the face. From here, it would be 2 to 3 more axe holds, and then Claudia could swing herself over the top. This was the spot where Scott had said they would most likely encounter the first signs of danger, an intrusion detection system, or worse, a sentry. Claudia thought about unholstering her SIG, but realized that her death-defying free climb had left her with no nearby pitons to snag her if she should fall. She would have to go without. The wind howled with a ferocious intensity. It was so loud that even if someone was standing directly above her, they probably would not be able to hear the sound of her axes digging into the last of the ice. Claudia held her breath and tried to concentrate on what she was about to do. Traversing the last 2 meters, as if it were only 2 feet, she prepared to hoist herself over the lip. Digging in her crampons, she gave herself a count of 3, and then swung her body with dangerous abandon over the top. Unbeknownst to her, the other side of the crest sloped at an extremely steep incline, and Claudia lost control as she began rolling down the slick snow-covered surface. She dug in her heels as hard as she could and was able to stop rolling. The last thing she had expected was that the crest would give way to such a steep hill. Claudia's mind raced with more pressing concerns. Had there been any intrusion detectors? There was no way of knowing. The incline took her by such surprise that she didn't have time to look.
Scott could be on his last breath, she reminded herself. I have to get to him. But what about sentries?
Claudia took a quick look around and saw nothing.
Time to get Scott.
Hammering with a vengeance, she placed 2 pitons a few feet back from the lip of the crest and anchored herself in. Scott had insisted on total radio silence, but Claudia decided to break it, if only briefly, to let him know she was about to pull on the rope. She didn't want him to give up.
On belay,
she said into her microphone. There was no response.
What if I'm already too late?
Once again, Claudia dug in her heels, leaned back into her harness, and began pulling hand over hand with all of her might. The rope instantly became taut, but wouldn't move.
He's more tangled than I thought.
Claudia leaned farther back and pulled harder. She willed Scott Harvath to live and to move. Her arms ached, her back and shoulders burned, but she wouldn't give up. Slowly, she felt herself making progress.
He's free!
She kept pulling hand over hand, an inch at a time. The pace and strain were excruciating, though Claudia didn't care. Scott was free. She continued pulling him toward her. The rope piled in a twisted coil as she fed the slack off her waist.
Not too much longer. Almost there.
Halt! Stehen bleiben!
Stop! Don't move!
The voice came from behind her right shoulder and took Claudia completely off guard. She was so frightened by it that she almost let go of the rope.
Stehen bleiben,
the voice commanded again. The man was dressed all in white, much like them, and carried an automatic weapon, which was pointed right at her. Claudia stopped pulling on the rope, but held it taut with her left hand.
What are you doing here? He asked in German.
We are climbers. We were stuck by the storm halfway down. We waited for it to get better, and when it did, we decided to finish the climb.
In the middle of the night? I don't think so. Come with me.
The man had been steadily closing in on her. She wrapped the rope twice around her left hand for security.
I have the right equipment. Look.
With that, Claudia grabbed one of the ice axes with her right hand, spun to her left, and with a snap, let it fly. The axe hit the man square in the chest. His throat let out a dry rasp of a death rattle as his winter-white combat fatigues went red with the gush of blood pouring from his body.
I don't know if you can hear me,
said Claudia over her headset as she began pulling furiously on the rope.
But I'm not alone up here. We've got to get moving.
Claudia was able to pull in several more meters of rope and thought surely he was almost there when the snow around her exploded in a hail of gunfire. There wasn't time to warn Scott. If she stayed where she was a dead woman. She reacted with the speed of a cat who'd stepped onto a hot stove. Tying off the rope, on one of the anchor pitons, Claudia rolled hard to her left toward the shelter of a small snowbank. The bullets fell like a hailstorm as the second sentry ran toward her with his weapon blazing. Claudia fought to pull the gloves from her hands. She needed to remove the pistol from inside her suit. The gloves came free, and next was the tape that covered her zipper. The sentry was getting closer. She could hear his boots crunching in the snow as he rushed in her direction, continuing to fire. Claudia pulled part of the tape away and then yanked down on the zipper. It opened a couple of inches and then stopped.
"What's the problem?"
Looking down, Claudia saw the tape had become caught inside the zipper.
"Damn it!"
The opening wasn't large enough for her to get her hand in and retrieve her gun. She pulled frantically.
"Come on! Come on!"
The man was almost all the way up the slope, and in only a matter of seconds would have her perfectly in his sights. Claudia kept pulling on the zipper, then remembered her knife. She could cut a hole in the suit and pull her pistol out that way. She unsheathed the blade, pulled the material away from her body, and plunged it in. She ripped in a downward stroke, and was about to reach in for her gun when she saw the sentry appear at the top of the slope. She was too late. As the man stood in front of her, his weapon rising to fire, it was preceded by a little red dot.
Laser sight.
Claudia watched helplessly as the dot traced up her leg, then her chest, where she lost track of it, before it flashed once in her eyes, and then came to rest on her forehead. Suddenly, the sentry's body tensed, and a red dot appeared on his own forehead. For a moment, Claudia didn't understand. Then, the sentry's dot darkened and began to drip.
Blood.
Looking to her right, she saw Scott, precariously perched half over the lip of the crest. He was still aiming the silenced Makarov at the sentry, who slumped to his knees and fell face first into the snow, a lake of blood forming beneath his head. Claudia ran to Harvath as he hoisted himself onto the crest and unslung the assault rifle. For several moments he didn't move and didn't speak. He just lay in the snow, staring upward. Finally, as Claudia leaned over him, he spoke.
"Wow. Talk about a cliffhanger, eh?
Are you okay?"
Scott rubbed his throat and continued to breathe heavily.
"I'll probably be wearing turtlenecks for a while, but I'll live. How about you?"
"Scared, but I'll live too. You know that's the second time you've done that."
"Done what?"
"Saved my life."
"You pulled me out of the water and off this mountain, so I'd say we're even," said Scott.
"Speaking of mountains, I thought you said you were a good climber."
"I used to be. I don't know what's happened. Maybe I'm getting old."
In most other circumstances, Claudia would have laughed at that. Instead, she just looked down at him, so happy he was alive.
"What happened to your suit?"
said Scott, referring to the slash Claudia had torn with her knife.
"Were you hit?"
"No. I did it myself."
"What were you going to do? Distract the guy by flashing him?"
"Very funny. I guess I can stop worrying about you now. You're 100% intact, bad sense of humor and all. Should we check the bodies?"
"Yeah, I guess my little nap time's over. Where there's two sentries, there's bound to be more. We've got to get moving before they figure out we're here."
"If you want to rest a few moments more, I'll check them."
"No, you take the one I just shot. I think I'd better take the other guy. He looks like he might have an axe to grind with you. Look for anything that might tell us how to get inside."
They searched the sentries, patting down all of their pockets.
"Anything?"
Scott asked.
"No, just cigarettes. Nothing else useful."
"My guy's still warm, like he hasn't been outside for that long. How about yours?"
"Same thing, I think."
"Good. They probably just came on duty. Hopefully no one will be expecting them to check in for a while."
"But this one has a radio. What if he called in?"
"There's nothing we can do about it anyway. Let's get going. Grab his weapon. You know how to use it?"
"H&K MP5? It's a common weapon for the Swiss police. We don't normally use silencers, but I can handle it."
"Good. Let's move."
Claudia pulled the weapon from the dead sentry and rolled him to the edge of the crest. Harvath counted to three, and they pushed both sentries over and threw the climbing gear along with them. They kicked up as much snow as they could to cover the blood and headed down the slope. 77. The trail was well marked, even in winter. It twisted and turned as it wove upward around high outcroppings of rock. After a final bend, Scott and Claudia came upon a small ridge that sloped downward, and in the distance, she could just make out the church.
"That's it," she whispered into her headset. "Excellent. Let's see if anyone's expecting us."
The pair lay down in the snow, and Scott affixed the night scope to the assault rifle. He scanned the ridge and the area surrounding the little church. While Scott did that, Claudia emptied the 9mm Parabellum ammunition from two of her SIG clips and loaded up the H&K submachine gun.
"It looks quiet. Doesn't seem like anyone's raised the alarm," said Harvath, rising to a crouch. "Follow me."
He picked a careful path off the trail, down to the small plateau that held the church. Several times, he raised the SG-551 to his shoulder and peered through the scope, scanning the area to make sure they were not walking into a trap.
"So far, so good."
They reached the back of the church, and Harvath tried to look in through the stained glass windows. It was completely dark inside. He signaled Claudia to stay low, creep around the other side, and meet him in front. He slung the rifle over his shoulder and removed the Makarov from inside his snowsuit. Cautiously, he crept around his side of the building. By the time he got to the front, Claudia was already waiting for him.
"Anybody home?"
he whispered.
"Some footprints in the snow. They looked new."
Claudia shined her small mag light on the ground, illuminating the prints. After examining the door of the church for any wiring or alarms, Scott tried it. It was locked. He signaled Claudia what he wanted her to do, and then got into a crouched position. His eye against the night scope, and his finger on the trigger, he nodded. Claudia flipped the firing selector on the MP5 to single shot, and positioned the weapon where Scott had indicated on the lock. Scott nodded again, and she fired, shattering the lock into a mass of hot, broken metal. Claudia gave the door a kick and quickly jumped back as Scott ran into the dark room, scanning every corner with the night vision device mounted on the rifle. Harvath signaled Claudia to join him as he continued to sweep the room. This time, she understood what it meant to cover someone six, and she did just that. The church was very small. There were about 10 wooden pews on each side of a narrow aisle. The whole room took only moments to clear. Suddenly, and without warning, Scott put his right hand up in a fist, and Claudia came to a halt where she stood. He had taped his mag light to the underside of the assault rifle, and now twisted it into the on position. He scanned the floor all around them. Claudia wanted to know what he was looking for, but she remained deathly quiet and didn't move a muscle. Confident no one was within earshot, Harvath finally broke the silence.
"Do you see the floor?"
Claudia nodded yes.
"We dragged a lot of snow in here, and it's already starting to melt. You see there and there?"
She nodded again.
"Now, look over there."
Claudia looked in the direction Scott was pointing, and on the gray flagstones, she could make out the imprints of two pairs of stocking feet.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"I think our friends don't want to make the same mistake we did and track in tons of snow, especially if this is one of the ways into the underground fortress. They take their boots off at the door and carry them in. But after standing around during a watch rotation, your feet get pretty sweaty. Believe me, I know."
"So they walked through the church in their socks, not knowing they were leaving a trail?"
"Yep. Time to follow the yellow brick road."
Claudia fell in step behind him. The footprints led across the floor to a raised stone platform that held the altar. Harvath scanned the flagstones for any sign of pressure plates, making sure to follow the prints step for step. They ended at an enormous stone baptismal font, above which hung a statue of the crucified Christ.
"A lot of folks come up here for baptisms?" asked Scott.
"Marriages, mostly."
"Seems kind of a pain in the butt to haul the kids and everyone up here to baptize a baby."
"You would bring all the same people for a wedding, wouldn't you?"
"I guess, but it seems awfully out of place."
"Remember, everything has a purpose."
"Your grandfather's words, right?"
"Right."
"Well, the footprints end right here, so there must be a door of some sort. We just need to find it. But first, let's get out of these suits. I'm burning up."
Scott and Claudia removed their snowsuits and hid their gear as well as they could at the far end of the church. Harvath then traded Claudia her assault rifle for the H&K submachine gun. It was a weapon he knew extremely well, and it felt good in his hands. While the SG-551 with its night vision scope was excellent for taking out targets at a distance, for close quarters work in tight spaces, nothing beat an MP5. Scott also gave Claudia the silenced Makarov pistol with its one remaining shot. Back at the baptismal font, they looked for hinges or any indication of where a door might be concealed. Almost an hour had passed since they had entered the church. Finally, Claudia whispered,
"Scott, look at this."
Harvath came over to Claudia's side, where she was using her maglite to examine a series of stone reliefs above the font.
"What is it?"
"See these?"
"Yeah, what about them?"
"They represent the original cantons of Switzerland, but there's something wrong."
"What's wrong?"
"There's an extra. It doesn't belong," said Claudia.
"What is it?"
She moved her hand over the worn stone.
"It looks very old, but it isn't. It's been made to look that way, to match the rest of the church."
"Great, but what is it?"
"It's the crest for the Army Corps of Engineers. It was on a ring my grandfather used to wear."
"Are you positive?"
"It's hard to tell exactly, but I think that's the point. If you were looking specifically for their crest, you would eventually find it, even though it's been worn down. But if you didn't know what you were looking for, or didn't know enough to make the connection, you would pass it right by."
"So what do we do now?"
"Let me move over here and stand where the footprints end."
Claudia moved as she spoke.
"From here, my arms are too short to reach the emblem, but a taller person, like those sentries, would have no problem."
"Do you think the crest springs a door?"
"There's only one way to find out."
"You're right," said Scott. "Stand back over there, and have the Makarov ready."
Claudia stepped backward and used the altar for cover. Scott transferred the MP5 to his left hand and reached up with his right for the emblem. The stone was cold and rough beneath his fingers. He took a deep breath and tried to push it in. Nothing happened. He then tried pulling it out. Nothing.
"Think," he told himself.
He tried turning the crest clockwise, and it began to give. There was a heavy grating sound of stone scraping against stone as the entire baptismal font slid back to reveal a narrow spiral staircase leading straight down.
"Open sesame," said Scott to himself.
Small flickers were followed by a series of lights beginning to illuminate. Scott flinched, and his finger tightened around the trigger ready to fire. After nothing further happened, he realized that there must be an automatic mechanism that turned on the lights when the hatch was sprung. Whoever designed the stairway was quite ingenious. The first fixture was far enough down so that it wouldn't cast any light whatsoever into the church. Scott signaled Claudia, who slung the assault rifle, and followed him into the stairwell. 78. Scott quietly descended the metal stairs with Claudia directly behind him. He delicately placed one foot in front of the other, careful not to make any sound. They were inside the lion's den now, and there was no telling when or where the first one would appear. When they reached the bottom, Claudia could see that the energy it took to move with such stealth was depleting what fragile reserves Scott had left. She gave him that same, "you are going to be okay" look he himself had given wounded colleagues and kidnap victims he had been tasked with rescuing over the years as a SEAL. In response to her glance, Harvath simply flashed back a thumbs up. He knew there was probably a mechanism to trigger the closing of the secret door above, but he didn't have any time to waste looking for it. A small hatchway led from the bottom of the stairs into a deserted corridor. The whole scene was eerily familiar. He remembered visiting one of the last remaining Nazi bunkers in Berlin. Everything he now saw was exactly the same, vintage World War II. The walls, which had been painted a utilitarian gray, were amazingly smooth, considering they had been carved right out of the rough stone of the mountain itself. With it located this far below the surface, there was no doubt how solid the compound was. Even the hatchway they had just passed through was made from thick sheets of steel, capable of withstanding an incredible blast. The bare bulbs that lined the walls and lit the corridors were enclosed in rusty wire cages, which only added to the feeling of total isolation that the Swiss bunker exuded at every turn.
"Where do we start?"
whispered Claudia. A series of three different hallways branched off from where they now stood. Squares of lighter-colored paint with holes in the corners were on the wall at the beginning of each hallway, and probably marked where evacuation plaques had once been. It would have been extremely helpful to look at one of those right now and ascertain the bunker's layout.
"Eeny, meeny, miny. We'll take this one."
"What about more sentries?"
"The way I figure it, Miner doesn't have a lot of men he can spare."
"Why not?"
"We killed two of his men in Lucerne, and two more outside. That makes four. There's a finite number of men he would have risked bringing in on this assignment. They would have to be men he could trust, men he had worked with before, and just enough to do the job. More men means more people to split the money with, and more chances of word leaking out and getting caught. We'll take this tunnel first."
The entire structure looked deserted. The only noise came from the overhead ventilation system, which creaked and moaned as it circulated air. Someone was here, somewhere. It was just a matter of finding them. Scott and Claudia passed room after room, all empty. There were barracks, a mess, and even a communications room with its equipment covered by locked metal panels. No smoking signs were posted every 3 feet, and the tunnel seemed to go on forever. When they finally reached the end, they had the choice of going right or left.
"What do you think?"
whispered Claudia.
"I think someone around here doesn't much care for smokers."
"What?"
"Never mind. All the other tunnels turned left, so I say left."
"I agree."
Carefully, the two moved forward, checking each and every room for signs of life. The fact that they had yet to see any gave them both the chills, though neither would ever have admitted it. They came upon another room. This one appeared to be an infirmary, or operating room of some sort, and it didn't look deserted. It had been used recently. They entered and swept the room with their weapons, Scott on point and Claudia watching his blind spots. She was quickly getting the hang of this. Medical instruments, saline IV bags, empty vials, and surgical equipment were scattered everywhere. A stainless steel table stood in the middle of the room. Scott depressed the foot pedal of a nearby garbage can and found a mass of bloody gauze, gloves, and paper wrappers.
"Well, we know someone's been here for sure," said Scott,
beckoning Claudia to come see what he had found. Claudia looked inside as Scott dug around the can with the muzzle of his H&K. She never learned whether he was looking for something in particular or just out of curiosity, because a stocky man with a military flat top strode into the room at that very moment. The man's first reaction was surprise. The last thing he expected to see standing in his surgery room was an armed couple going through his trash. In one smoothly executed move, Claudia let go of the assault rifle and drew the Makarov from her waistband. She had only one shot, and she used it perfectly. The bullet entered the nurse's brain just above his left eye. He was killed instantly and dropped straight to the cold tile floor. Harvath was on the man in a heartbeat, dragging him inside where his body couldn't be seen from the hall.
"Where'd you learn to shoot like that?"
he asked.
"Growing up on a farm in Grindelwald, you find lots of ways to amuse yourself."
"I doubt you learn that kind of shooting on a farm. Help me get him all the way inside."
Claudia was just as amazed as Scott at her own deadly accuracy because, in fact, she hadn't aimed at the man's head. She had been aiming at his chest. Either he moved or she moved, or they both did just at the last second. It really didn't matter. What mattered was that the man had been neutralized before he could sound an alarm.
"We must be getting close. They wouldn't have spread themselves too thin. There are probably three or four rooms that they're using. They will be as close together as possible. Let's get moving before anyone comes looking for this guy."
Harvath checked the hallway twice before signaling to Claudia that it was safe to come out. They continued in the same direction, hugging a flat wall with no further doors. A group of crates were pushed up against the left-hand side, and they had to swing out to the right to get around them. As soon as they stepped into the middle of the hallway, a yell broke out behind them.
Eindringlinge! Eindringlinge!
Intruders, followed by a spray of automatic weapon fire. Scott grabbed Claudia and threw her behind the crates for cover, and then landed right on top of her.
I guess they know we're here,
she said.
You think so? Listen, I'll take care of the guy with the big mouth, and you make sure nobody comes from the other direction.
Harvath flipped on the laser sight, swung the MP5 around the side of the crates, and rolled out onto his stomach. The man at the other end of the corridor was on full auto, and the bullets sent pieces of gray-painted rock everywhere. Despite how close the shots were falling, Harvath focused his concentration, gently squeezed the trigger, and fired. The spray from the other end of the corridor came to an abrupt halt, and the man fell to the floor, dead.
That's one down, he thought. But how many more to go?
Scott, I think you'd better get back here,
said Claudia, immediately answering his question. He rolled behind the crates and began hearing what Claudia had heard, footsteps, and lots of them, coming fast from the opposite direction. Claudia had the assault rifle ready to go. When the first of the men appeared around the corner, she let loose with a deafening round of fire. Everyone's weapons to this point had been silenced, so the unsilenced SG-551 Swiss SWAT assault rifle sounded like a rapidly booming cannon. The men retreated back around the corner.
Now's our chance. Let's go.
Harvath jumped up and pushed Claudia around the crates in the direction they had originally come. Scott ran as best he could backward, guarding their six as Claudia ran as fast as her legs would carry her forward. They came upon and passed right through the T intersection where they had been 5 minutes ago. Now they were running down the corridor to the right, opposite of all the other tunnels. Only sporadic doors were visible along this passageway, and they were all locked. This hallway was carved much rougher than the others and seemed to be some sort of access or service tunnel. Eventually, it began to curve back around to the left. Scott and Claudia kept running. 50 meters later, the tunnel opened up onto a large cargo bay, complete with overhead winches. Huge pallets stacked with food and bottled water sat in the middle of the otherwise empty room. Scott walked over to examine the pallets.
Evian, he said.
There's also French wine and Italian pastas, said Claudia.
Somebody's got good taste.
But how'd they get it in here?
That way, said Scott,
pointing to a set of railway tracks on the far side of the bay that led into a dark tunnel.
I'll bet you a year's worth of water that those tracks link up somehow with a cogwheel railway.
At the far end of the pallets was a smaller pallet covered with a green canvas tarp. Scott walked over to it and drew it back. Underneath were crates of ammunition and wooden boxes filled with various weapons. The look on Claudia's face said it all as she stepped closer.
Let me guess, said Harvath, your stolen weapons.
Yes. I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I can't believe it.
Well, that takes care of everything on your Christmas list. Now for mine. Where's that U.S. president I asked for?
From behind the pallet closest to Claudia, the groundsman sprang up and placed the point of his pistol against her temple.
That is not part of the tour, I'm afraid, he said.
Harvath's eyes bored into the man, and he tightened the grip on his MP5.
I suggest you drop your weapons, said the groundsman.
Claudia hesitated until he grabbed her left arm and gave it a good strong jerk. She let her assault rifle clatter to the floor. Scott also hesitated, but then set the H&K down gently.
Very good, the groundsman said, as he ran his hands along Claudia's body.
He found her holster and removed the Sig Sauer.
And what about you, said the killer, indicating he was speaking to Harvath. You American cowboys never only have one weapon. I should expect at least 5 or 6, no? Let's go, out with the rest of them.
He kept a firm grip on Claudia's arm as he pointed his pistol at Scott to emphasize the seriousness of his point.
You know, began Harvath, I really hate it when people point things at me. It doesn't matter whether it's guns, knives, or... Now, Claudia!
Harvath dove for the deck, on the off chance an involuntary spasm might cause the pistol the killer had trained on him to go off. Claudia clumsily drove the blade of her knife deep into the side of her captor's throat and stepped back. He clutched ineffectively at the blade, falling to his knees in agony. As the blood gushed from his neck, all that was visible of the knife was the bone handle. Claudia rushed to Scott, who pulled her into his arms.
You okay?
He asked.
I think so. Not bad, but remind me to teach you sometime the correct way to use one of those things.
Claudia stared at the man who had killed so many in his lifetime, lying on the floor, dying.
My grandfather gave me that knife. I never climbed without it.
Scott was about to say that he liked Claudia's grandfather more and more with each passing minute, but he didn't get the chance. A group of men emerged from the access tunnel and began shooting. Claudia tried to reach for her assault rifle, but Scott pulled her away.
There's no time. Let's move,
he yelled, grabbing her hand and running toward the opposite end of the cargo bay. The pallets provided some cover at first, but the bullets got closer and closer as they broke into the open and ran for the nearest hallway. 79. Between the two of them, the only weapon they had left was Scott's Beretta. Out of habit, he examined the clip and drew back the slide to check the chamber. He had 16 shots, semi-automatic. Not much against a group of men carrying submachine guns, but it was better than nothing. He and Claudia kept running. They came to another intersection, and before they knew what was happening, two men with H&Ks appeared from around a corner. Scott dropped to one knee, and Claudia hid behind him. He fired 3 shots at each man, taking them both down in a roar of gunfire that echoed throughout the tunnel. Scott and Claudia were deafened by the blasts from the Beretta, and couldn't hear the men from the cargo bay coming down the hall behind them, but Scott sensed it. He whirled and managed to keep Claudia protected as he fired again from his crouched position. The bullets didn't find their targets as quickly this time, and he pulled the trigger repeatedly until finally one man fell and then another. Scott yanked Claudia to her feet and pushed her down the corridor. They came to another intersection.
Which way?
She yelled. Scott pointed left, and they ran. 30 meters later, they hit another intersection. Scott glanced quickly behind them and motioned for Claudia to go right. They did, and Claudia stopped dead in her tracks. She wasn't sure what she noticed first, the man or the smell. 15 feet in front of them was a man dressed in desert fatigues with an Arabian-style headdress. Only his eyes were visible, but even then, they were shaded by the fabric. In his right hand, he held a Model 61 Scorpion machine pistol, and it was pointed right at them. Scott, who was right behind Claudia and had almost bumped into her when she stopped so suddenly, reached his left hand out for her waistband, knowing the man in front of them couldn't see it.
Drop your pistol on the floor, Scott yelled.
Harvath hoped Claudia understood what he was going to do, or they were both dead for sure. He gave her waistband the first tug, as if to say, one. Then came another tug, two. Claudia nodded her head ever so slightly, as if to say she understood. And on tug 3, she let her legs go limp, and the two of them dropped. Scott's first shot went off just as he was hitting the floor and missed the man's head by a fraction of a centimeter. His next shot was dead on, right between the eyes, and the man went down. Scott's pistol was empty, and he let it fall where he lay. The man had been sitting at a small wooden desk across the hall from a large metal door. On the desk was a ring of keys. Harvath stepped over the man to grab the keys and almost had to pinch his nose from the stench of body odor.
Fucking Middle Easterners.
Why hadn't some of them ever heard of showers? Scott had been convinced that neither Abu Nidal nor his FRC was involved with this whole mess, but now it looked as though he might have been wrong. Or had he? Harvath reached down and yanked off the headdress. Underneath was the head of a man with blue eyes and blonde hair, who looked more Swiss than Heidi of the Mountains herself. Scott glanced at Claudia, whose face was registering the same bewilderment as his own. Why pose as a Middle Easterner? What's the point? With the keys in his hand, Scott motioned to Claudia to pick up the scorpion.
Cover me, he said.
Claudia nodded and looked both ways up and down the hallway. Approaching the door, he noticed a shelf had been built directly to the left, and on it sat a box. Wires ran from the box up the wall and above the door.
Booby trap?
Very gently, Harvath opened the box and looked inside. What he saw made absolutely no sense at all. A tape recorder. He pushed the play button, and he heard a faint wailing sound coming from the unit's built-in speaker. It was a Muslim call to worship. Even more bizarre. Above the door was another box with some sort of fan unit pointing toward whatever lay on the other side. Scott dragged the creaky wooden desk chair around the body and beneath the box so he could check out this other mysterious item. Once again, he eased off the lid. Immediately, he was sorry. It was like being punched in the face. The stench was horrible. There was only one thing in the world that smelled like that. Camel shit. The two boxes were not booby traps. They were meant to annoy the hell out of whoever was on the other side of that door. And Scott was finally sure of one thing. He knew exactly whom he'd find inside. He gave the door a last once-over and also checked beneath the desk for any hidden wiring or switches. There were none. Claudia stood ready with a machine pistol as Scott found the correct key and turned it in the lock. As the door opened, Harvath was greeted with a hot gust of air and the terrible smell of camel feces. The temperature had to be at least 30 degrees higher than in the hallway. The room was dark, and it took his eyes a moment to adjust. The walls had been treated to look like sandstone. The floor was covered with straw, and there, sitting in the corner, his hand in a dirty bandage, was the president. He was dressed in the simple robes Harvath had seen on so many Arab peasants during missions in the Mideast, the same type of robes the members of Operation Rapid Return had been wearing when they were killed. The light from the open door hurt the president's eyes, and Scott maneuvered himself in front of it to help shield the glare.
"What do you want?"
"If you've got my food, then leave it. If you're going to take another finger, then get it over with," said the president. His voice reflected how drained he was.
"Nobody's going to hurt you anymore, Mr. President," said Scott.
Rutledge lifted his hand to his forehead and tried to peer into the light.
"Who is it? Who's there?"
he asked feebly, too forlorn to even hope that a rescue had been achieved.
"It's Secret Service Agent Harvath, sir. You're going home."
"I seriously doubt that," said a voice, as Claudia was struck in the back of the head and thrown in a heap across the floor, landing next to the president.
Scott spun just in time to see Gerhard Meiner bring the machine pistol down hard across the top of his head. Harvath's knees buckled and gave out. He fell to the ground, and before he could catch his breath, Miner kicked him hard in the jaw, sending him reeling backward.
"Do you know how many of my men you have killed? Do you have any idea what an incredible inconvenience you have been?"
While he ranted, Miner kicked Harvath repeatedly in the ribs.
"Some of the finest men I assembled for this mission are dead. I worked tirelessly, thinking of everything, and then you come along and ruin it all."
The blows fell again and again. Scott was unable to breathe. The man was going to kill him, and then Claudia, even Rutledge. Scott was seeing stars. The blow to his head had been incredibly painful. He needed to do something now, or it would be too late. As Miner drew his foot back and came forward for the next kick, Scott was ready for him, and grabbed at his ankle in mid-strike.
"Do you honestly think that I'm that stupid, Agent Harvath?" said Miner,
who anticipated the move, avoided it, and now pointed the scorpion right at him.
"You seem to have more lives than a cat, yet this is how it is going to end for you, and your president will be able to watch you fail him yet again. I would like to say that it has been nice knowing you, but it hasn't. As I said last time, I hope never to see you again. Now, I will make sure that happens."
Harvath started laughing.
"What's so funny, Agent Harvath?"
"Ah, Jerry, if you only knew how much I hate having things pointed at me."
Miner's smug look of satisfaction was quickly replaced by fear as he was barreled sideways into the wall of the makeshift cell. Claudia had taken advantage of the fact that Miner was distracted and thought her unconscious to surprise him. He fell to the floor with the machine pistol in his hand, rolled, and struck Claudia full across the face. Once again, she fell in a heap along the floor, and this time, Harvath knew she wasn't faking. Without wasting a moment more, Harvath fought back his dizziness to pounce on Miner. As Scott fought to subdue him, Miner struck him repeatedly with the gun. Harvath returned the favor with a knee to Miner's groin, an elbow to his face, and an uppercut to his jaw. Harvath hammered at the man's shoulder, and reached for the hand that held the gun, which was once again swinging dangerously toward him. Scott caught Miner by the wrist, and drove it with incredible force into the area where the wall met the floor. He heard a snap as Miner let out a scream, and his fingers squeezed the trigger. The 20-round magazine emptied in the blink of an eye. Bullets showered the room. Scott could only pray that neither Claudia nor the president had been hit. As he continued his assault, Miner began to weaken, and Scott knew he had hurt him, badly. He pounded the man relentlessly, the blows falling faster and with more ferocity. He pounded him for Agents Maxwell and Ahern and Houchins. He pounded him for the betrayal he had suffered at the hands of William Shaw and for the lies of his friend Natalie Sperando and her friend Andre Martin. He pounded Gerhard Miner for all of the innocent lives that had been lost, especially that of his best friend Sam Harper. Miner was going to die, and Harvath was going to send him to hell on an express train, all expenses paid. Scott's hands were covered in blood. He heard bone shatter as he landed his blows. His rage, guilt, and remorse drove him on like a madman. In the middle of it all, something called out to him, urged him back toward the shores of sanity. There was a hand on his shoulder, the president's. He was speaking to him.
"Agent Harvath, that's enough," he rasped. "We need him alive. Come on now. He can't hurt us anymore. Let up on him."
The president was right. Scott slowly rolled off Miner and looked at the badly beaten body lying before him. He couldn't tell if the man was breathing or not, and frankly, he didn't care. The president had begun to regain his equilibrium. Despite his haggard appearance, some of the stately confidence was back in his eyes.
"Are you okay, Mr. President? Can you make it on your own?"
"I'll be okay. Let's get her up."
To Scott's relief, Claudia was coming around. Her lip was split and bleeding, but at least she was responding. He put his arm around Claudia's waist and struggled with her to the door. He was beyond the point of exhaustion.
"We're almost there. Don't give up," he told himself. "Don't give up."
"Mr. President," said Scott, motioning toward Miner, "unless you've got an idea on how to get him out of here, we're going to have to leave him. My mission is your safe evac, period."
"You called the man Jerry. Do you know who he is?"
"Yes, sir, Mr. President. He's a high-ranking member of Swiss intelligence."
"Swiss intelligence? What's he doing over here in the middle of the godforsaken desert?"
"Actually, sir, you are in a mountain in Switzerland."
"Switzerland?"
"Yes, sir. For some reason, I don't know why, they wanted you to believe you were being held by a Mideast terrorist group."
"Fine. We're in Switzerland. We'll let the Swiss handle him. Let's get out of here."
"Yes, sir."
Scott steered Claudia out the door and to the right. The president followed behind. Harvath had no idea if any of Miner's men would be in front of them, but he knew they had to chance it. Going back the way they came didn't seem like the best idea. Not even 5 feet down the hallway, they discovered the direction Scott had chosen wasn't such a hot idea either. A tall man with the build of a linebacker stood blocking their way with a submachine gun. Unlike Miner's men, he was dressed in street clothes. The minute he spoke, Harvath knew exactly who he was.
"No gun, eh? What a shame."
It was the hired killer who had been after him since D.C.
"You know what?" the man continued. "You are the biggest pain in the fucking ass I have ever encountered. I'm gonna charge double for you and waste your girlfriend for free. Good men, talented men, died trying to nail you, and I guess that makes me the best, because I finally got you."
The hitman raised his gun for a better firing angle. "I took 2 rounds from you in D.C., and my ribs are so fucked up I can hardly breathe. If I'd had a clean shot, I would have nailed your ass before you led me up this godforsaken mountain. You know, you actually lost me for a bit. You almost got away. While you were climbing up the side, I took the easy way up, and eventually saw you going into the church. That's when I knew I had you. It's been fun, but now it's time to meet your maker. The assassin's finger had just begun to apply pressure to the trigger when his head exploded. His lifeless body lurched toward the wall and then fell to the ground. Standing behind him was his killer. He was quickly joined by a group of similarly dressed figures in black Nomex fatigues, with goggles and black balaclavas.
My God, how many men does Miner have? Harvath thought desperately.
He had no idea what to do. His mind raced for options. He knew he had to protect the president at all costs, but what could he do against a group of six heavily armed men when he had nothing? He and Claudia had almost made it. Almost. The man who had killed the assassin reached across his weapon and pulled a piece of black material from his arm. Underneath was a red, white, and blue flag, along with a symbol for the Army's elite special forces. He then removed his balaclava, revealing the face of Dr. Skip Trawick. Using his favorite mock Scottish accent, the first words out of his mouth were, "Surprise, surprise!"
"You guys sure took your time," deadpanned Harvath.
"We were on our way for a pint and heard you needed a wee bit of help," said Trawick, still in character. "Where's the president?"
"Right here," he said, as Claudia and Scott parted to let him pass. Trawick dropped the accent immediately and identified himself. "Glad to see you. Hell, I'm glad to see all of you. Is the area secure?" asked the president.
"Yes, sir. It is now."
"Thank God you got here in time."
"If you don't mind, sir, I would like to check you out before we evac."
"Absolutely not. First, you check on the young lady, and next, it's Agent Harvath. Then, I want your men to..."
"I'm sorry, sir, but these are not my men. I just happened to be first down the hall and got a clean shot. This is a JSOC op. These men are from SEAL Team 2.
As the men started removing their balaclavas, Scott recognized almost every one of them. Their commander shot Harvath a thumbs up, and several others followed suit. It was finally over. 80. Geneva, Switzerland, 2 days later. Scott Harvath awoke slowly. The room took a few moments to come into focus. Looking down at his arm, he saw that he was on an IV. The sunshine streaming in through the window bothered his eyes. A shadowy figure loomed at the edge of his bed.
"How you feeling, buddy?" a voice said.
Scott recognized the voice, but it took him a few moments to focus in and clearly see the face.
"Dr. John Paulus. Well, I'll be. This is getting to be like old home week around here,"
said Scott, struggling to sit up. John helped him adjust the bed.
"Yeah, the kid told me he found you," said John.
"Who, young Dr. T? Skip knows better than to share classified information. I'm sure this mission has big red stamps all over it."
"He told me he was part of the team that picked you guys up. He wouldn't say anything he's not supposed to."
"Well, why don't you tell me what the hell you're doing here?"
"First, tell me what you remember."
Scott closed his eyes and thought back over what had happened, and what he'd be able to tell without revealing too much.
"You're doing a diagnostic and checking my memory, right?"
"Yeah, that's all I'm doing. I've been cleared to a certain extent, but why don't we start from where Skip gathered you all up?"
"Is that how he's putting it? He gathered us all up?"
"The kid's a cowboy. You know how those guys from Texas are."
"Okay, so Skip gathered us up. We took the cogwheel to Alpnachstad, where a couple of jets were waiting to bring us to Geneva. I assume the president is still here?"
"Nope. They brought him in for the complete once-over and then zipped him back to D.C. They want to do the hand surgery back there. You've made a lot of people very happy and very proud of you."
"Thanks, John. But what the hell are you doing here? Last time I saw you, you were back in Park City."
"There was a lot of concern about what condition the president might be in, if and when they found him. You know, about the finger?"
Scott nodded his head. The fact that they'd done that to the president still made him sick.
"Well," continued his friend John, "there were big-time fears that these guys might go even further and that he might be in pretty bad shape once they found him."
"So they had the world's greatest orthopedic surgeon standing by, right?"
"I don't know about the greatest. One of the top 10.
How about that?
Plus, you already had security clearance, so that didn't hurt.
But if they were flying Skip over, why not let him do it?
Like I said, the kid's a cowboy. He's good, but don't forget who discovered him.